Welcome to the World Peace Diet Circle. This is teleclass number 11. This is Steve, and thank you for joining the call. We've got an exciting evening with Dr. Will Tuttle and a special guest, so stay tuned for that. And just a quick announcement, your membership site is updated with your March resources, so you'll find that under teleclass 11 for the World Peace Diet Circle, and you can go ahead and download that at any time. It's right there on the page. So check that out, and let's bring to the call right now, fresh off the vegan cruise, Dr. Will Tuttle.
All right. Hi, Steve. Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for joining us here on our call. We have a beautiful opportunity this evening, I think, to deepen our connection with what it means not only to be a vegan, but to be an economically or to be a thrifty vegan. But actually, one of the things that sometimes we hear is that it's expensive to be a vegan. I've heard that a number of times, and so we are going to have a special guest, Ellen Jaffe Jones, joining us here pretty soon on our call. And she's the author of Eat Vegan on $4 a Day. But as Steve, as you said, Madeline and I, a few days ago, disembarked. We've got our legs back again for walking on the land. It was actually it's a pretty big boat, so it's not too hard. But it was a beautiful cruise, I think, all in all, to a few different islands. And I would like to say a little bit about it maybe later, about some of the things we learned. This was the third time we've done this vegan health cruise. The emphasis definitely is on health, not on compassion, particularly, or spirituality. However, we did about nine events there, some lectures, four meditations in the morning, and as well as a concert. So worked to kind of balance things out, and it seemed to go pretty well. And it's interesting also to see the controversies about whether we should be eating cooked or raw, no oil or low oil, or abundantly, not oil so much as fat, I guess is a better word, fat, because that means that because we're talking, I guess, nuts and seeds very often, not just, most people agree that refined vegetable oils are not very healthy. But there's a whole continual evolutions to our movement, and as different books come out and theories are proposed, and as whole waves of people begin to call themselves vegans for a variety of reasons, and the movement is reaching out more and more, I think, into the mainstream for many reasons. So one of the facts is that it's a lot healthier. It's a lot better for the environment, certainly a lot better for our psychology and our spirituality and for animals and for our culture as the World Peace Diet, as we try to really give that picture. So I think that all of these levels of the message are continuing to go out into the world, and sometimes we have to be patient and work with people where they're at. I think that's one of the important things to be aware of. So thank you, everyone, again, for being with us this evening. And I'd like to begin our time just very briefly, because our special guest is with us. So I'd like to just invite all of us perhaps to take a moment here as we begin our time and just pause and have a moment of silence in the memory of and in dedication to the animals that we share this beautiful earth with. And may their suffering at our hands not be in vain. May we learn to awaken from the hypnotic delusion that we are required to eat the flesh and secretions of animals, that this is something that is necessary for us to be healthy. And may we together create a world of peace and harmony that includes everyone, from every culture and from every species. I see a lot of evidence that we are moving in that direction. I see a lot of evidence that there are powerful forces working to, in some ways, inhibit that. But I think ultimately we are on a trajectory. As Martin Luther King said, it's maybe long, but it bends towards justice. So I will go ahead and thank you all again for joining us. Let's remember there are, besides those of us who are on the call, actually by phone, there are others who are on the call through their computers in Australia, New Zealand. There are others who are going to be listening into the recording later, our friends and colleagues in Europe and whoever can't be on the call tonight. So so we include all them and all the people in our circle of friends and acquaintances. We give thanks for all of our relations, for everyone who's helping to make a better world. And I have in my hand right now a very beautifully put together book by Ellen Jaffe Jones from Sarasota, Florida, called Eat Vegan on $4 a Day. Eating well doesn't have to break the bank. Not only can a plant-based diet be good for your health, it can also be easy on your pocketbook. With some nice endorsements from Rory Friedman, Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, T. Colin Campbell, Neil Bernard, and Ruth Heydrich, all good friends of ours. We've had some of them on our call here. And I think I mentioned last month, I had a chance to meet Ellen a few weeks ago. Madeline and I were giving a presentation at the Unitarian Church in, or the Unity Church, actually, in Sarasota. And get a chance to actually meet her. And I'd heard about her from Steve, who has had her on his show. And Ellen is a real, I think, tribute to our movement. You know, she's a person that can wear lots of different hats, many of them, I think, probably at the same time. And she's probably most well-known for her best-selling book, Eat Vegan on $4 a Day, which has quickly become her publisher's number one bestseller. And her published, it says, you know, one of the things I think is interesting, which maybe we can talk about a little bit here, is that her publisher credits part of the success with Ellen's dedication to and use of social media. And her success with that has been very promising. So Ellen is a coach. She's the Veg Coach, has the website vegcoach.com. And so she's coaches people in being vegetarian successfully and vegan successfully, and is also a motivational speaker and personal trainer. She's a runner and a running coach, and also teaches healthy cooking classes. And so she's and also coaches people on using social media to build up a presence on the web. So that's an important thing, I think, for us as we, as a movement, begin, continue to expand our message out into our world, to do it using the Internet, I think, is obviously an important part of that. So Ellen is knows about that, and she's a very healthy and gifted person who's spent many years also in the, as I understand it, in media, in television. And so she's lost 25 pounds on a plant-based diet herself and improved her fitness, and has a real heart for the earth, for animals, for people, and for the benefits of plant-based nutrition. So we're really delighted to have Ellen with us and to have a chance to hear some of her perspective on how we can thrive as vegans and how we can effectively spread the message. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I want to just remind all of you who are listening that this is your call. Please formulate a question you'd like to ask Ellen, and press *2 on your phone, and we will call on you, and you'll get and you'll have the opportunity to say whatever you think, an opinion, or ask a question. Or if you're at your computer, go and type it in, and we'll have a look at it, and I can go and ask her myself directly. But it's really important that you talk to, you know, feel free to speak up partly because when I was on the cruise, seemed to have a little, some kind of a little virus that was, I guess, running around on this ship. And normally I'm utterly immune for decades at a time, but this somehow seems to have grabbed me here, and my voice seems a little bit weaker than normal. But anyway, so let's welcome to the call, Ellen Jaffe Jones.
Thank you so much for having me, Will. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, great, great. So you're calling from Sarasota, is it?
Yeah, just a little bit north, actually. We live on an island called Anna Maria Island, where fast food restaurants are banned, and they have no buildings taller than three stories. So it gets written up in the national press a lot as being the last of old Florida. And interestingly enough, people get up in the morning and count the number of endangered turtles. I mean, we ended up here totally by accident, but I think somebody was intervening and placed us here.
Great. Yeah, Madeline and I have had a chance to visit your part of your neck of the beach there, and it's a gorgeous place. It really is. I recommend it to everyone. If you ever get a chance to hit Sarasota, in itself is a beautiful area, but the beaches are wonderful up around where you are, just north of Sarasota. And tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming a vegan and to what you're doing now, because I think there's probably a lot of lessons we can all learn from some of the things that you've discovered, and especially, well, just, I know it's a big question, but it'd be great just to hear some of the things you've learned in your journey.
Well, it's kind of interesting. Like Neil Barnard, I am the third child of three same-sex siblings, and so I had my whole lifetime really to figure out what wasn't working and what kinds of things did work. And at the age of five, my aunt died in our home of breast cancer, and that was a very traumatic event for me, and it really set in motion what would be a lifetime of searching, like, how do I avoid this mess? And my mom, aunt, and now both sisters went on to have breast cancer. We were part of the original breast cancer gene studies, and I just became very involved. I was an investigative reporter in television in Miami and St. Louis for 18 years, won two Emmys and the National Press Club Award. And so, you know, this became the investigative reporting job of my life. And along the way, of course, I covered my share of horrific animal abuse stories, as most reporters do at some point along the way. Mm. And when my babies were young, I joined the St. Louis Animal Rights Team, where I was a reporter, and then I took off 6 years to be a stay-at-home mom. I actually joined the La Leche League, which, for those of you who don't know, it's a breastfeeding information and support group, and that's really where I kind of latched on. That's a good pun. Latched on to the concept that we only should be drinking our own species' milk, and how perfect it is for our species, and why would we even be drinking another species' milk? And when my oldest daughter had colic, screaming, blood-curdling colic, it was the Leche League that said, are you drinking milk? Because it's going to be passing on to your child. And so as soon as I got rid of dairy in my diet, within 3 weeks, the signs of colic were gone. And I remember that with future children. So, you know, those kinds of things set in motion this whole process. And it really wasn't until when I left television. Well, back up. While I was in television, I almost died of a colon blockage. I collapsed in the newsroom. We had a terrible snowstorm. The station was catering all kinds of yucky meats and processed foods, and I just wasn't drinking enough water. And the doctors in the emergency room said, you need to do something drastic or you're going to end up like everybody else in your family, and you'll need to be on meds the rest of your life. So I ran to the health food store and read all five books on fiber, because that's about all there was in 1980. And that's when I started making changes. I actually did a macrobiotic diet for about a year, and then I just found as a working person it was too difficult for me to keep up with it, and I morphed into a vegetarian diet at that point. So those were the kinds of things. And then as far as writing the book, my goodness, I just got tired of seeing all these stories on the news that said you can't eat well on a budget. Having done this myself for the better part of 30 years, I knew that it wasn't true. And when I left television, I became a financial consultant at Smith Barney for 5 years, where I was actually the number one market performer in my branch in St. Louis. And what that meant was how well I did for clients, not for myself. As you might imagine, I took my Earth Mother status and focused on socially responsible investing, which meant investing in companies that did good things for the environment, avoided tobacco and firearms. And in addition, I had a number of clients, especially in St. Louis, who wanted to have own companies that didn't test on animals or have animal products in the portfolio. So that became my specialty. And I, as a result of being the number one market performer, I didn't get one of those Wall Street bonuses, just to be clear, that you hear about. In fact, all I got was an email that went out to every other broker in the office. I was the only woman on the list both years, the top 10 list, and 1 year I was actually number one. And the reason is a lot of brokerage firms don't want the public to know that the number one market performer is not necessarily the one who's making the most money for the company and has the most clients. So it was a real eye-opening experience, and after 5 years, I realized that it was just a little too challenging in terms of being able to make enough money to live off of, quite frankly. I never made more than $20,000 a year. So you don't often hear about those kinds of stories. Joined my husband in media training. He had been doing that for 20 years, and that's where I reconnected with Dr. Barnard, who had come to St. Louis to speak, and I just emailed and said, hey, do you need any media training? And he said, absolutely. So that began a long relationship where I was doing media consulting, media training, putting doctors on camera as if they were going to be doing interviews with television and newspaper reporters, and did that for a number of years. And just working with those kinds of folks, really the idea began to germinate that I needed to put this book together, because nobody else at that point had done a recipe book that actually had prices associated with the recipes. And so I got some great software called Living Cookbook, and I would enter every single ingredient based on my local pricing of the ingredients, which here in Southwest Florida is fairly expensive. So I'm hoping that the prices in my book will actually be more expensive than what your listeners might be experiencing where they live.
Right, right. Well, that's fascinating. So did you, for example, when you were, it sounds like you were basically training and coaching people like Neil Barnard and I'm assuming perhaps some of the other vegetarian or vegan folks to have a camera presence that would be more positive? Is that basically it?
Well, it was, first of all, let me be clear, Neil Barnard didn't need a bit of coaching. I mean, some people just are born gifted.
He's great,
speakers.
Yeah.
And he is definitely
right,
in the cream of the crop, which is why it's so exciting now to see him get on all these national programs, because from
right.
the first time I saw him speak, I thought, this guy is just star quality. And it took about 10 to 20 years of basically writing book after book and just working very hard to try
right.
and get the attention that he so justly deserves now. But there
right.
were other doctors that are not quite so much out there right now, but people who had
yeah.
would take on different issues that would be very specific to Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine or other groups. And so that's where I met T. Colin Campbell, who also endorsed my book.
Yeah.
Colleen Patrick-Goudreau was actually a Cancer Project instructor, which is what I did in the very beginning. I actually did it for about 6 years and then really had to stop just because of my travel schedule with my book. But that's how I met a number of different people. And, you know, it's been very exciting as I've been speaking around the country, going to the different vegetarian festivals to meet the people, the authors whose books I've been reading all these years who have really saved my life. And when I spoke in Boston, the newspaper there quoted me as saying, it's payback time for all the doctors who have helped me along the way. And that's really how I view this. This is just one area that
right.
I have of expertise, and I'm happy to give it back to the world just to show that it's way cheaper to eat a vegan diet than it is to eat the cheapest form of hamburger meat. And that's one of the things I do in my presentations, is I show people pictures of prices at big box stores, because I want to show that you can eat a vegan diet even at Walmart, even if you don't want to shop there. But, you know, you can do it there if money is truly the issue. I just wanted to be able, as we said at Smith Barney, overcome anybody's objection to eating a vegan diet because it's expensive, because it doesn't have to be.
Right. Oh, I remember in the old days, in the beginning, it was everyone knew it was the cheapest way to live. You know, if you got some rice and beans and made some soup, you could feed at least, you know, 50 hippies for like $5, you know.
I had one guy come up to me in Boston. He said, you know, I'm actually the head chef at a monastery, and we do it on $1 a day. Mm. I just wanted you to know that.
$1 a day. Yeah. Thank you. Wow, that's amazing. $4
a
day.
I think they were growing their own.
Right. Great. So you've been a vegan then, or for a while? Is that right?
I started in the mid '80s when my sister got breast cancer and I almost died of the colon blockage. And you know, first year was macrobiotics, and then vegetarian. And I became vegan before I had children. When I had kids, you know, I joined the group of folks who had the misconception, I guess is fairly common, although I think information is getting a little easier to obtain in some ways now. But I felt like I was made to feel like, especially as my kids got older, that they needed dairy, and once they went to school, it was hard for them to turn away from the many temptations that kids have in public schools. You know, I was the one who was serving the veggie burgers in the days that parents were allowed to come up to school for a school lunch. I would bring the carrot cakes and the fruit for birthdays. And my kids at the age of 3 were the only ones who, when the farmer held up the green leafy thing and went, "What is this?" fully expecting and often getting kids who would say spinach, my kids would pipe in with kale, because we had it growing in our backyard. So I had an organic garden and really tried to get the kids eating more of a vegan diet, but it really was vegetarian during the early years. And as they got older, again, it just became a little bit more of a challenge for a lot of different reasons.
Right.
But
as
my sister got breast cancer, now for the third time, you know, when I was at Smith Barney, we had a bit of a challenge also because we had catered lunches where we were kept in a room, and the only choice we got for our working lunch was what kind of topping we wanted on the pizza. And then often we would have annuity fund or insurance company dinners with our clients at places like Morton's, and the choices were extremely limited. I used to joke that I would try and live off of my McDougal cups, which I kept under my desk at work, but as I'm fond of saying, one cannot live by McDougal cups alone. And when we moved to Florida, my weight had ballooned up beyond obnoxious, at least for my 5'3" frame, and found myself in the emergency room again with hemorrhaging fibroids. And the doctor said, you know, you need to have an immediate hysterectomy. But my OB got on the phone, who was vegan, as it turns out, and she goes, "Ellen, go back to that plant-based diet and call me in the morning." And within 3 weeks, all signs of menopause were gone, including hot flashes, much to the amazement of my husband, who would be sitting there with his arm around me, and he'd go, "You're flashing now, dear, aren't you?" And then it just went away, just like that. And, you know, I wonder how many women out there could have avoided hysterectomies if their doctor had just said to them, "Go on a plant-based diet and call me in the morning." It was truly amazing. And at that point, I started running. I'd been running when I was younger before kids. And then once I started running with the vegan diet, it was just like the pounds melted off within 6 months. I took off all the weight that I had gained. And now I place in 5K races for my age group. I did my first marathon in December of 2010, and I was the 5th oldest woman to finish the Palm Beaches Marathon. And I coach high school girls cross country. And, you know, I actually run with the girls. I'm probably somewhere in the middle of the pack. About half of them run faster than me and half of them run slower. But most of them say, you know, "You're like my grandmother's age. How do you do this?" And it's like, with a marathon, I felt like I could keep running except for my flat feet. That's one thing a vegan diet does not cure, is flat feet. But energy-wise, I felt like I could keep going. And it's truly amazing, truly amazing.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for giving us the a lot of really great insights, actually, into that you're not on your journey, but the kinds of things that can bring someone from eating a typical diet to a healthy diet to a very healthy diet, and also do you have, and it sounds like you're also helping people to transition to vegetarian, to vegan diets as well.
Right. And
so you're coaching or?
Yes, and I like to joke that anytime broccoli makes it on your plate, it's a victory. Just because where I work with, as a personal trainer, I'm AFSA certified, which is the same certification that Jillian has. And, you know, you have to go through a training program, and it's pretty traditional as far as the nutrition part of it goes. So where I work, I actually work out of a health club here in Southwest Florida, plus I have my own private clients. And, you know, they all know my story. And some of them, especially the older they are, they say, look, you know, I'm just not at a point where I want to change my diet. And I worked with a client just this week, and I always ask clients to give me a food log because it just helps me to really know where they are. And she was resisting doing it. And finally this week she came and she was just so frustrated with our working out after three times a week for a number of months, and her weight hadn't budged. And she had always told me, oh, I eat healthy. Well, she brings in her food log, and it's pretty much, I'm not exaggerating, donuts and potato chips. And I find that when you work with clients, it's one thing for them to say what they think they're doing, but when they start recording it, it really reveals quite a different story. And you have to find whatever level, wherever they are, and just try and have little successes and little victories. And it becomes just more difficult, frankly, I find, unless in my cooking classes I would find that sometimes people would get desperate on their deathbeds. There was one woman who came to my class. She had multiple myeloma, which is one of the more fatal forms of cancer. And she started eating the recipes out of Neil Barnard's cancer survivor guide that we used in our cancer project cooking classes. And she lost 120 pounds in 8 months without counting a single calorie, never being hungry and loving the food. When she came to my class about 8 years ago, they had given her up for dead. I just got a note from her on Facebook. She's still alive. Her blood work is still great. She's moved back up to Michigan to be with her kids. And it's just an amazing story, and I'm sure there are many more like those out there that where people are able to be successful. But as I say in the book, there's no money in broccoli, which is kind of a concept I learned when I was working with La Leche League. There was a great book called The Politics of Breastfeeding, and it talked about how there was no money in breast milk. It's not made by a corporation. There's no breast milk board or foundation or lobbyist. It's all very grassroots. And it's the same thing with produce. And one of the things I look at in the book is the advertising money that goes to the various sectors. And I actually, with my husband, had the occasion to do media training for the National Watermelon Promotion Board. And if you look in my book, I have this broken down where watermelons actually get $1.6 million in advertising dollars compared to dairy products at the top of the list, $281 million. And fluid milk is under that at $107 million, and beef is under that at $79 million. So that's why when you walk in your kids' cafeteria, you don't see any watermelon posters or broccoli posters, but you see beef. It's what's for dinner. Or got milk posters, those kinds of things. That's what that money is paying for. And until we can elect politicians who have the power to break up this way too cozy relationship between the USDA and the various lobbying groups, then these kinds of patterns are going to continue.
Right, right. Well, I'm wondering, does anyone, if you'd like to ask Ellen a question, please press star 2. We have folks listening in here, and I'm kind of double checking to see if anybody's asked a question over there on our in the place where you can write them in. But I'm looking at the book. I just want to also tell people that I think this is a great resource to have. Personally, I'm just saying that because she's got not only a lot of delicious-looking recipes that are very, simple, straightforward, and tell exactly how much they cost, but But there's a nice whole section in the beginning about nutrition and plant, you know, specifically plant-based nutrition, how you can sort of organize your kitchen around plant-based cooking and some of the psychology, some of the politics involved. So it's a good sort of overview book for getting through the delusion, because one of the things that we emphasize in the World Peace Diet is that eating animal foods is essentially cultivating a mentality of privilege and elitism. And so working out with plant-based foods, you're doing the opposite. You're going back to more egalitarian mentality and trying to be more humble, in a sense, and closer to the earth and not demanding of people and animals that they sacrifice themselves and allow hungry people to eat as well. And so the idea that it is less expensive is important to emphasize. And you've already talked about the subsidies to these industries. That's one of the big things. There's also the economies of scale as well, and the fact that we're just raised in a culture where people aren't educated about how to cook grains and beans from scratch and buy whole foods. People are buying processed foods. And aren't processed foods quite a bit more expensive?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, people talk about the convenience of processed foods, but I talk about it's not very convenient when you have to have your chest cracked open for heart surgery, or when you have to spend time getting chemotherapy, or you lose a limb to diabetes, all of which I've seen in my family up close and personal. That takes a huge amount of time, and it robs you of time with your kids and your grandkids. My parents were so sick by the time I had kids, they couldn't lift up my children, let alone babysit them. So entire generations are losing out. But crunching down to the numbers, and I stress this a lot when I talk, when you look at the cost of the cheapest form of hamburger meat, which is 30% fat, that's about 60 cents. Compared to an equivalent portion of beans, that's about a dime. And then when you start upping the amount to more expensive cuts like beef tenderloin, it's about $4. I'm sorry, 4 ounces is $6.80. So it's just a huge amount when you talk about the economy of scale. And that's just the actual what you can save at the grocery store. One of the things I'm really big about talking about both in the book and when I lecture around the country is what you save by avoiding disease. The average cost of a heart bypass surgery in the U.S. is about $100,000 over the course of your lifetime, once you have the procedure and then the resulting medical costs after that. So at Smith Barney, we had this phrase in all financial services called dollar cost averaging. And what that means is you take that $100,000 and you average it out over the course of your lifetime on the number of hamburgers that you eat. So that $5 hamburger that you get at a restaurant, depending how long you live and how many hamburgers you might be eating over the course of your lifetime, it's really more like a $500 hamburger if you're averaging in the cost of that bypass surgery. And whether you pay for that bypass surgery, I do, the government, insurance companies, preventable diseases are not sustainable. And I have seen entire families go bankrupt because they cannot pay their medical costs beyond what an insurance company is paying for them. And I saw this in my own family. My sister, one who is diabetic, goes in for routine herniated disc surgery and flatlines on the table from MRSA and becomes a quadriplegic, and then within the year gets breast cancer. So many of these dots are connected, and we wonder why there's so much MRSA when these poor cows are getting pumped with antibiotics because they're getting bovine growth hormone to produce 15% more milk. And as any breastfeeding mother will tell you, when you do that, you plug up the ducts and you get infections in the milk glands, and then you have to have antibiotics. So all these dots are so interconnected, and it really hurts us the most in our wallets. One of the reasons I wanted to approach eating vegan from a financial standpoint is when I was at Smith Barney, I found that environmentally companies really didn't care about supporting the environment. But if you show them how much money they could save by recycling not only their own company's cans, but other companies' cans as well, then all of a sudden they were very interested in being socially responsible and environmentally cool.
Right.
So I really felt if you could show consumers, especially those at Walmart, how much money they could save, that they would be very interested no matter what the food was. And I tell you, as I was taking pictures of the prices in the processed foods aisle and the frozen food section, where the prices of foods were 10 and 20 times more for boxed cheesy potatoes than the real potatoes a couple aisles over, you know, I would get pictures of people who were shopping in these aisles, and I would just want to, like, say, you know, first of all, you couldn't tell who the patient was on the motorized vehicle from the healthcare provider. I mean, they both just look so completely unhealthy and devastatingly sick. And I just wanted to grab them and say, hey, there's a great deal on beans a couple aisles over. Follow me. But, of course, I didn't do that. But that's just the kind of we were discussing some issues on Facebook yesterday, and one of the phrases that somebody used to describe me was righteous indignation. And I said, you know, there's a difference between self-righteousness and righteous indignation. That is a phrase that is often used to describe reporters, investigative reporters in particular, who have this sense of,
yeah,
like, well, how do these officials get away with stealing money from the school district? You know, one of my biggest stories was about the school superintendent in Miami, Florida, who stole, he blew his whole career on $9,000 worth of gold-plated plumbing. And I found out about it, and it was the proverbial tip of the iceberg. And that's the kind of stuff that I still, when I look at what we are doing to ourselves as a country and in the world by destroying our health in such devastating ways, I do have this sense of, like, it, you know, I got to try it before I check out of this world. I got to try and do something about it. And certainly using my background in the media to try and communicate that in a way that is simple and easy and show people how cheap it is, it's just amazing. And my big point is when you exchange meat and dairy, if you get that out of your life and trade it in for beans and grains, you have so much more money to spend on fruits and vegetables, which are certainly a little more expensive than the beans and grains, but there's plenty of money left over to do that. One of the things I often get asked is, can you eat this way organically? And I do have a section of the book that deals with that. In fact, I have three pages in the back of the book with all different kinds of resources. But my favorite tip is, or one of my favorite tips, is localharvest.org. That's a website, and it used to be, if you went on www.localharvest.org, you would only find a CSA, and that stands for Community Supported Agriculture. These are little farms around the country that the government started. In some cases, they still sustain. Other times, they're privately run. But they are local farms where you actually buy a share, and I belong to one in our area, where you pay about anywhere from $15 to $25 a week, and you get 4 to 6 bags of luscious, usually organic produce. It isn't often certified organic because it's more expensive and you have to go through quite a process to get that certification. But if you go there and watch what they're doing, you can satisfy your own curiosity about whether they are organic or not, and if where their seeds are coming from. That's also a really important thing to know, that they're not genetically altered. And if you volunteer there, often you can get the food for free. So there are some ways where you can get organic produce very cheaply, if not at a really greatly discounted rate.
Right, and not to mention growing your own.
Of course.
That's great.
And here in Florida, that's a little bit of a challenge. There was a guy here who started a company called Earthbox. And what it is sort of a glorified recycling bin that has a tray on the bottom, so the dirt is not sitting in water. And you have a little pipe, a PVC pipe, that goes through the soil, and you pour water in through that pipe, and it sits on the bottom so that the water gently rises through the soil. And, you know, that keeps the roots from rotting. And it's a pretty good way to do it here if you don't mind growing food in plastic. But the soil where we are, the only thing you can grow here would be citrus. So it does get to be a challenge in different places around the country. But up north, absolutely. I had my own organic garden, and it's definitely the cheapest way. And interestingly, during World War II, there was a really big effort to have victory gardens. It was a way of saving resources
right.
in our country, and our health was actually better during that time. There are some studies that show that after World War II, when we were able to have more access to meat and dairy again, that's when heart disease really started soaring.
Right. Excellent point. We have a hand up here, Steve. Go ahead, Steve. Get your hand up. That's great.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you, Ellen. It was nice meeting you at the expo.
Thank you. You too.
I thought I'd break the ice, and hopefully other people are going to start asking some more questions too. So my question is, how has social media helped you to grow the message, and like how active are you on there? Are you getting people to help you with managing that? Or you would love to hear what kind of role social media has been in spreading the message and growing your work.
Well, the reason I got inspired to do it, aside from getting on Facebook like probably some of us have to spy on our kids and make sure they're alive, is I shopped my book with an agent that actually Neil Barnard had recommended for about a year. And she went to all the big boys, all the big boy publishers, and they all turned me down because, first of all, I was a first-time author and because I wasn't already a celebrity. And so she said what they wanted to know, all they really care about, is how many friends you have on Facebook and how many tweets you tweet. And that just stuck in my brain. And so she had recommended my book to Book Publishing, which is the publisher that eventually did publish the book. And they've been wonderful to work with, so much so that when they asked if I would write a second book, I didn't even shop it around just because I love the people there. And they published my first book, so I feel like anything I can do to help them, I would do. And as you may be picking up, I'm not doing this for money. It's more a mission of love and trying to just help people avoid the pain and suffering I've seen and witnessed in my lifetime. But, you know, it's just been an amazing journey, really, to see how this all transforms and how people can be helped. But there are lots of good ways that you can continue this journey. If you are somewhere on the fence about it, I don't know where everybody is, but it's just a great way to not only feel healthy and energetic, but to just focus on what you can be doing to save at least just one animal. And the videos that are out there so much, and that's one of the things that has helped, I think, in the sales of my book, is just there are so many videos that I can link on my Facebook page. And when I first got started, I did I heard a guy speak at our local Chamber of Commerce on social media, and he said he was available for one-on-one consulting. So he came and spent an afternoon with me and got my first Facebook page, which was the name of my book, up and running. And he actually, for the first couple of months, because I was a little insecure about it, took over the posting on my page. And then I very rapidly realized that this guy wasn't vegan. And like, he was asking things like, do you eat honey? And I thought, you know, things like that I could easily take over and do myself, even though it was more time consuming. But those kinds of people are out there. They will take over your page if you want them to be the administrator, because it can become very time-consuming. At this point, I am doing it all on my own. I only worked with him for a couple of months when the book first came out, and I realized that I could do it much better and much more efficiently, really, on my own. I have my Facebook pages, and I have several of them, both my personal page, my book page. I have a personal training page. I also started, why not, vegan athletes. I was inviting people to post pictures of anything they were doing athletically on a plant-based diet. So I will set all that up to tweet also at the same time. So now I'm close to 8,000 followers on my book page. And, you know, that's how that's kind of come together. I'm also working very hard getting more YouTube videos up. I got the new iPhone, the 4S, S4, and it's much easier to shoot videos with. because I worked in television, I was really very much a perfectionist about using our video camera that we use in media training, and it's a much more sophisticated and, frankly, more difficult camera to use. But I just went to our CSA yesterday to pick up my weekly share of produce, and I did several videos, actually, while I was there, and I've posted them on YouTube, and then once they're on YouTube, I link them to all my Facebook pages, and there are a number of other people who have invited me to post my videos on their pages as well. So it's a very viral community, and it's so cool when another website like Vegetarian, that particular page on Facebook, which has I think over 100,000 followers now. When my book came out, she was the very first person to write a review of my book on Amazon. And then she also was the very first person on Facebook to say this book is coming out and, you know, I hope you'll buy it. So those kinds of things, it really makes you feel like there's a great vegan supportive community out there of people trying to help each other. And I try and remember that when other books come out so I can help people on their journey too.
Great. Wow. Well, thank you so much. This has really been very interesting, just hearing how you've been able to bring your message through in all these different ways to the public. And you do quite a bit of public speaking as well at vegetarian festivals around the country. Are you?
Yeah, you know, that's been such an amazing thing. I mean, I do it for free. My publisher basically has been very effective in getting me invited. I've done some things on my own, like recently the New York Vegetarian Festival. I just contacted them, and you know, the topic is pretty interesting and timely. So you know, it's worked both ways. Both my publisher has got me in, and I've done some things on my own. But because of my public speaking background, I really, really enjoy it, and I understand that there's just not a lot of people out there talking about how cheap it is to eat on a vegan diet. And so as a result, like, I'm going to Seattle next weekend, and as a result, I have contacted all of the television stations in that television market and said, I'm going to be there. You want to come over and interview me? And a lot of people just don't have that comfort zone that I do. And I think because I train so many people, not only in vegan issues, but other issues as well, I'm pretty good at crafting a soundbite and doing an interview. So that comfort level is right there, and I really enjoy sharing with people how they can save money by looking for bargains and what to look for when you go to the store. One of the big tips I talk about is looking at the unit price. Because in writing about this, Dr. John McDougall had written in a newsletter about 4 years ago that he believed all the recipes in most of his cookbooks could be done on $3 a day. And that was actually the original title of my book. It was Eat Well on $3 a Day. And because of inflation, the publisher and I agreed to up it to $4. But when you look at that unit price, it's usually by the ounce. And when Dr. McDougall started writing about it, he was trying to quantify it in calories. And I thought, as people go shopping, they're really not thinking how much food is going to cost by the calorie. But if you can boil it down to the lowest common denominator, the ounce. For example, broccoli, the last time I looked at it locally, was 11 cents an ounce. So if you're going to eat 4 ounces, that's 44 cents, or 8 ounces, that's 88 cents. Yeah, that's really not a lot of money. Or cabbage is a real bargain these days, anywhere from 2 to 5 cents an ounce. I think it's in season in a lot of places, so that's why it's so cheap. So that's what I'm really trying to get people to do. When you look at that per ounce price and you go over to some of the packaged foods, it's through the roof. And I just want to go, like, what's in your wallet? And so you can really save some significant money by shopping the perimeter of the store, trying to be open to new foods and flavors, and some other common sense tips that I have in the book. And I think this is really important. I've culled a lot of these from my consumer reporting days. But, of course, the basic one, not shopping on a empty stomach, because you're likely to buy things that probably aren't very healthy for you that will give you instant addictive gratification that are high in sugar, high in fat.
Right.
And then buying in bulk also, that's very important to plan. We actually, once upon a time, bought a house from a Mormon family, and in their basement they had food that was stored up for a year. So it was a lot of beans and grains in hermetically sealed containers with a rubber gasket, kind of like a mason jar. And, you know, that's one way, especially here in Florida, to keep things very fresh for long periods of time. People have said to me, oh, your food is great hurricane food, and that's really true. It's stuff that you can cook and in times of stress or when the electricity is not cooperating. Other tips are looking up and down at the supermarket shelf. Companies pay big bucks to have products at eye level, and so the bargains are often going to be in places that are difficult to reach, especially down around the bottom shelves. And also buying store brands is another big money saver. Don't buy the name brands. And then in terms of just living on a budget, things like paying with cash, keeping your receipts, tracking the prices, those are some good tips to just kind of keep your money in a manageable place in your life.
Great, thanks. We have I think probably just time for one question. We're going to kind of wrap this up here. Thanks so much for this information and just your wonderful energy. Go ahead, from Ohio.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yeah, I can hear
you.
Hi,
this is Persephone.
Hi, Persephone.
Hi, and Ellen, thank you for talking with us tonight, and I'm looking forward to getting your books.
Thank you.
My question, I am sort of one of those people who for a very long time I've been talking about writing a book and sort of never actually sit down to do it, and I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and I said, you know, there's always vegan books coming out, and I feel like, why would I write a vegan book? I said, but people always go out and buy the new vegan book. And she said, Persephone, you could say the same thing for massage therapists or anybody else. Why would anybody become a massage therapist when there are so many of them? She said, it's because somebody's going to want your particular take on it. So I finally sat down and I started writing. It was finally that kick in the pants I needed. Yeah, so I'm just looking for any advice that you have for a first-time writer.
I think the main thing, you know, people ask me how long I've been writing my book, and I say since I was 5 when my aunt died of cancer in our home. And another thing that somebody said to me along the way, when you have about 3 or 4 books in your head you want to write, you're probably ready for the big one. And the main thing, though, and you know, that's just great that you're starting and beginning this journey, just don't take no for an answer. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. If somebody turns you down, you keep knocking on doors. And there's so much now that you can do. You can self-publish. My husband actually published his book about 20 years ago on media relations, and it went through 8 different printings over the course of 20 years. Mm-hmm. And you can make a lot more money self-publishing, of course, but the challenge there then is how do you get the word out? And that was the choice I made. I obviously saw his great success self-publishing, but that was in a time when you could charge, as he did, $24 for a paperback book. And, I mean, it was a very, very big book, but it was still, you know, in this day and age, the challenge with my publisher was how do we write a book about saving money and keep it cheap enough that people can afford it? And, you know, from day one, when you buy it on Amazon, they immediately discount it. I mean, the cover price on my book is $15, which is what I sell it for off my website when I sign them and send them out. But Amazon sells it right off the bat for $10. So you have to take that into the whole consideration. So it really is a challenge. And, you know, if it's something you are very passionate about, I think that's in my experience in meeting so many of these authors now that I'm speaking around the country, you know, they're all so passionate and they just carry it with them. And I think thank you, Bill Clinton, for going vegan, and Steve Wynn, the guy in Las Vegas who's this big mogul out there who I'd never heard of before, he went vegan. But, you know, all these celebrities are doing it, and it really is quite trendy. So I think there is a lot of room for many more authors coming forward. And as I think I mentioned, I've already signed a contract for the second book. My publisher said, you know, we don't care what you write, just do it. We know how you market. And sadly, that is is, what they're looking for. And that would be my other big piece of advice. Build your Facebook page. I probably have too many pages as I look back on it. I wasn't sure what would stick, but you should probably not. I was advised to have a Facebook page for my book. And I think that's worked pretty well, but now that I'm doing a second book, I've been told, well, maybe you should morph that over if you can into just your fan page as opposed to your individual page, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. Thank you. Well, it looks like we have one other question. I've got a few more questions now that y'all come in here. in addition to asking clients and teaching cooking classes, what else do you do as part of coaching people to become vegan? Is there anything else?
Well, as a personal trainer. I'm sorry?
Yeah. She's just wondering. Go ahead.
Okay. As a personal trainer, when I work with clients, they first come to me for working out. They think, you know, that I'm mostly, and I am when I work at a gym, I'm mostly about the exercise. But as a personal trainer, I am trained to ask the nutrition, and, you know, I can't get into terribly specific recommendations without adhering to some kind of program, because in the state of Florida and other states are like this, I can't act as a registered dietitian or even a nutritionist and give out a specific menu plan. However, I can set them up with I love Nutrition MD, which is Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine's sister site. So you can go on that site, pick out recipes, you can set up a menu plan for yourself, and then it will not only spit out the nutrition part of it, but it will also give you a shopping list, which is very cool, and all of that is free. So that's a very valuable resource that I refer clients to, and I try and at least give them my best shot at telling them, if you're serious about losing weight and whatever you've been doing in your life hasn't been working for you, and I give them my best success stories of some of my clients and my students and certainly myself. And they also, my gym is just so great. They have a lot of, I've gotten a lot of, as you might imagine, some newspaper coverage. I was on the cover of the St. Petersburg Times. It's now the Tampa Times. But they had a weekend magazine called Personal Best, and they had me lie on the floor of our kitchen, and they put a bunch of cut-up vegetables around my head, and that became the cover photograph for the magazine, which is kind of cute. But the gym has those kinds of things posted. Oh, yeah. And that was in advance of the Tampa Bay Veg Fest. So if you are speaking anywhere, trying to get media coverage, that would be another thing I would recommend. The media just, I saw something once that they were trying to get more media or trying to get more television cooking shows with vegans because the quote was, vegans are so interesting. Whatever.
Great.
And that's something I'm trying to get done, too, is I actually sat next to a guy on a plane recently who said that he would try and work on that for me. We'll see if that shapes up into anything. But just doing as much as you can to get out there, any kind of even a small article somewhere, you can build on that to send it to another larger publication or media outlet to try and get yourself some coverage if you're comfortable with that.
Great, thanks. We have a question. Are there any, from Patricia, are there any mutual funds you can recommend that are vegan friendly?
Well, here's the thing about that. I was a fully licensed financial consultant, which meant that at the time, which was, gosh, when did I stop doing that? 2003. So I haven't been licensed since then because that's when I joined my husband in his media training business. So my information would be very old. At the time, I remember that Ariel Funds was a good one. Because I'm not licensed, I'm not really qualified to recommend specific investments like that. And they were really strict about adhering to the rules and regulations like that. But if you Google socially responsible investment funds, I'm sure you'll come up with a group that's very current. And you want to check their performance, too. It's important to look backwards over 5 years at least to see what their performance has been. But they actually perform pretty well, and that was another reason I was the number one market performer, because most of my clients were in those kinds of funds and specific stocks, too. And these were the kinds of companies that were acting very prudently and weren't doing crazy things, with one exception, the number one holding in all socially responsible mutual funds, just because they were such a cool company, or at least they were on paper, was Enron. So at least some of the mutual fund money managers, the ones that I worked with, had the sense to get out of that pretty early on. But just do the research, just like any good investigative reporter would.
Right. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's really time for us to move on to a few other things we want to talk about here in our call, but you were just a delight to have with us. I'll definitely look forward to staying in touch with you, Ellen, too, and our paths will be crossing again, I'm sure, before too long. So
well, thank you so much for having me,
and
if there's
me.
Anything I can
great.
Do for you or your listeners, just I'm on Facebook, of course. Just email me with questions, whatever.
Right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bitcoach.com. Yeah, thanks so much. All right, take care. Thanks. Wow, she was just very interesting. That was great. Thanks so much. And we have... I'm kind of aware that we've gone through an hour, and maybe it'd be good to hear from a few folks that also would like to say something on our call. We have, I know Persephone is putting on putting on a training for vegan challenges, or anyone who would like to be an organizer of that, wherever you happen to be in the United States. And Persephone, would you like to say a couple of words about that, or just to let people know? I think it would just be nice to mention it, if you'd like. So we can...
Hello?
Okay, we got you. Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Basically, in another couple of weeks, we're going to get down to the business of planning the Vegan Challenge, which takes place during the month of August, encouraging people who are not vegans to follow a plant-based diet and explore veganism for 1 month. And if you want to know more about it, you can go to the website. It's The Vegan Challenge. Actually, maybe I should go look this up to make sure I'm telling you the right thing. TheVeganChallenge.webs.com. And I have it on the facilitator discussions. I've got it actually posted. So you can look that up. But you can go to the website and find out about it. And basically, I am just going to work with anybody who wants to hold a vegan challenge. Oh, it's just... let me see. Yeah, theveganchallenge.webs.com. So I'm basically going to be mentoring people through, organizing your first vegan challenge in your city and going through that whole process. That's about it. We'll start in a couple of weeks doing that, and the vegan challenge is in the month of August.
Great. So I just want to encourage everybody, if you want to find out more about that and participate or learn how to set up a vegan challenge in your community, you can do just what you say, go to that website. If you go to our forum for the World Peace Diet Facilitators, there's a whole listing there. We've got a thread. So thanks so much, Persephone, for that offer. I think that's just fantastic, really. That's great.
Oh, thank
it's
you.
A good way to... have a lot of ripples going out. Thanks. And now we also have Nina from Massachusetts, who's doing some great things. Oh, gosh, really interesting with the local Unitarian churches. Nina, are you with us?
Hi, Will. How are you?
Great. Yeah, sorry to keep you waiting quite a while here on that. But
that was a fascinating interview.
There was a lot to learn. I know there's so much to learn from so many different people, and I think it was great. But anyway, if you could say a few things about the several things you're up to, I think that would be great.
Oh, sure. I also have Lisa Nuttall with me here tonight, and she has really been sort of my right hand in the activities and events that we've been doing. I think this weekend we'll be going to our fifth Unitarian Universalist Church, and we have a service that we're presenting. It's ethical eating as a spiritual practice and its reflections upon the World Peace Diet. And Lisa had taken the first World Peace Diet study that I had done last year, and she joins in the service and shares some of her insights on the change that she went through while studying with the group. And we do singing, and it's been well received. We bring vegan food for their coffee hour, and Veg Fund has been very generous, and they have supported us with each service that we've done and helped subsidizing the food. And we give out PCRM materials. We make recipes of all the food that we're providing as samples, and we also hand out vegan outreach, compassionate choices for people too. And I've tried to piggyback other events that I can promote to the churchgoers. We're going to have some World Peace Diet book studies coming up in two towns that are going to coincide, hopefully, with your upcoming visit to our area. And we've also been working with the Supreme Master people, and we'll be doing a cooking demonstration at a local senior center. And the local veg festival in Worcester, we're hoping that, you know, we'll get a good turnout and promote the Circle of Compassion and the prayers for the animals along with the World Peace Diet message.
Wow, that's a lot of different things. And, she's actually been contacting Veg Fund quite a bit. I want to, you know, just sort of underline that. Veg Fund is a great resource, and we know the people there, they're very like to help. They have funding to help you if you need funding for a booth or food. They'll for an event you're doing to spread the vegan message or World Peace Diet message in your community. It's a great way to use them, and I love this outreach through the Unitarian churches who have an ethical eating program, as well as the Veg Fest and having a table there. These are all really great ways to have people who would never hear this stuff suddenly have the opportunity to learn, and you never know how that's going to help our planet. So, thanks so much, Nina. We're looking forward to it. This is going to be in July. I'll be in Massachusetts doing.
Right, and we're going to have our peace conference.
And we're having a peace conference, right? So, Madeline and I continue our Veganize North America tour in our 17th year around North America. So if anyone else, wherever you happen to be, you know, let me know if you'd like to do something similar. I think what Nina and Lisa, what you folks are doing is really exemplary. So thanks so much and for what you're doing. It's amazing to see. And feel free to get in touch with Nina, you know, through the forums or however. Also, I just, again, encourage people, we have Facebook pages as well.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Could I just add one more thing?
Sure.
You know, when I first started out on this journey as an activist reaching out, it was very difficult for me to find venues in the beginning. I'm now on my fourth year, and every month I have at least two events going on. So I just wanted to share that with people. Don't get discouraged. You know, keep on, you know, trying to brainstorm, find different venues. And eventually the word gets out what you're doing, and then people start contacting you, and it snowballs.
Right. And starting a group, it was interesting when we were on the cruise, this lady was telling me she lives in, I think it's in Modesto, California. There was not anything there at all, no vegetarian group or anything. Just, you know, she felt kind of alone. And she said she just started putting notices around wherever she thought someone might be interested in health food stores and so forth, that to have a once a month gathering. And now they're in their third or fourth year. They've got 50 or 60 people coming every month and doing vegan potlucks and sponsoring speakers occasionally and all kinds of things. So it's really always I think possible to. That there are interested people out there, you know, in your community who are just waiting to be able to plug in somewhere, and we can facilitate with that as well. So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, you guys, Nina and Lisa. Appreciate it. Thanks. And let's see. We also have, let's see, do we have anyone else who would like to contribute something to our beautiful tapestry here this evening, what you're working on in your area, or any questions you may have, or any comments, or any questions for me about anything that has gone on before? We have someone with a hand up. Go ahead, or you're unmuted. It says anonymous on the call.
Hello?
So.
Hello?
Hello, yeah.
Can you hear me? Hi. Hi, Will. Is this Veronica?
Hi, Veronica. Oh, great, great.
Hi.
Yeah, you've been doing a lot of wonderful things, too.
I've been very active lately. Yeah, I wanted to share pretty much, you know, what I'm doing right now. As you know, I am enrolled with the Institute of Integrated Nutrition to become a health coach. And, of course, I'm going to emphasize vegan health coach in my training. It's been actually very challenging because I have to deal with non-vegans as well in the school. Not everybody is going for vegetarian or vegan. And I have...
Right, you've done a great job bringing the message to them, I think, as well. So it's been great.
I'm trying. It is challenging, and I'm still fighting, I'm sort of fighting with a lot of people to keep on bringing the message. I have tons of new friends that I started, you know, with people who are pretty much believing the usual myth about meat and dairy. So every time I just can't help it, I have to raise my voice and say what I think and sort of bring out the issue and try to bring a little bit of balance in the discussion in there. So that is very challenging. So what I did is once, one of the advantages of school is that they help you set up a website and teach you how to market yourself with newsletters and so on. So I have set up a website which I called yourveglife.com, yourveglife.com.
Uh-huh.
And I have a newsletter that anybody can subscribe to. I send it out once a month. And in that newsletter, I have recipes. I have I'm going to focus on some particular type of foods, and you know, and try to be also bringing the animal rights issue in it. Like my last newsletter, for instance, had an article about quinoa because I think it's one of the best foods that exists on this planet. Also the article about lavender and lavender oils and aromatherapy. And I had a recipe,
great,
a quinoa recipe on it, and also a small article about the human meat myth, which I feel very strongly about. So that's what I'm working on. I'm trying to reach people and help them to change their health, open their consciousness to the vegan message at the same time. That's, I guess, what works the best for me. And I am not necessarily very good at going out there and protest or setting up challenges, but I feel very comfortable talking to people about their health and trying to raise their consciousness at the same time. And I had a few successes so far, so I'm very happy with it. And I'm hoping to be able to reach a larger audience,
terrific,
as much as I can. Thank you.
Yeah, that's terrific. I mean, there's such a the sky's the limit, you know, really. We can all reach people directly in our communities or through the Internet the way you're doing it and reach, you know, lots of people that way, that maybe also be in your geographical community as well. So. We're just creating it as we go, as the whole internet continues to become more sophisticated. I think it's becoming a better and better tool for all this stuff, and just keeping up with all of it is pretty challenging.
Definitely.
But I highly recommend everyone check out Veronique's website and the blog that she's got, and get on her e-newsletter subscription, because some great articles, really good stuff.
Thank you, Will.
It's fantastic. Really, it's fantastic. Yeah, I really, really liked it.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate it. Thanks. All right. So this has been really very touching to have all these the continuing unfoldment of people's lives as we learn more about ways that we can make an impact and make a difference. And sometimes we may not realize how much of a difference we're making in the lives of other people. I do want to mention a couple of things real quickly here, that the book publisher that Ellen published Ellen's book, Eat Vegan on $4 a Day, she never mentioned it, but that's the book publishing company in Summertown, Tennessee. It's really the farm. The farm, the old hippie commune where I became actually a vegetarian back in 1975, just turned 22, I guess. They have what has become the largest vegan cookbook publishing company in North America. And they're just wonderful people. And I want to sort of remind everyone that we have a gathering there. If you're interested, the World Peace Side Conference, they contacted me and wanted to set it up. It was their idea, not the book publishing company, but there's another arm of the farm that does retreats, and they do some great retreats. They do eco-village training, alternative energy training, spirituality and consciousness, Native American spirituality, and organic gardening, and all kinds of things, raising consciousness and bringing more spirituality and awareness and peace into the world. And so that's going to be the first weekend in May, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I think it'll be a wonderful event. I'm really getting excited about it. So please go to the website for that. And you can just go to I'm trying to think if there's a way. I'll post it. I have to figure out a good way. I'm going to send out an email to everyone, so you'll probably get it in an email in the next day or two. And I'll put start a thread maybe on the forum as well. But I think it would be great to actually meet some of you in person that we haven't met, perhaps at the farm in Tennessee. It's a beautiful, historic place with lots of buildings, lands, it's a wildlife sanctuary, rolling hills, forests, trails, beautiful swimming stream with a nice swimming hole, and plenty of opportunity to go deeper with the Ideas in the World Peace Diet, and Madeline and I will be just delighted to see you if you can come. So we have that event coming up. And then finally, just kind of getting down to the wire here, as far as the last month, there's been a lot of you know, progress being made continuously in the whole evolution of our species toward more compassionate living. I think we're seeing resistance. The primal diet or the Paleolithic diet people seem to be especially making noises, but I think they're losing ground. It's being seen as a fad diet more and more. And we have, again, the unassailable truths that eating a basically totally plant-based diet is the best thing we can do for compassion, for our own spirituality, and for health and the environment. And I on the March resources, the very last one just came out, I think, in the last day or two. Mark Bittman, who's a pretty well-known non-vegan writer, is one of the first ones, I think, to talk about some of the things I discuss in the World Peace Diet, the human cost of animal suffering, how hardening our hearts towards the suffering of animals for food as a society, we are harming ourselves emotionally, spiritually, and culturally. And so it's great to see that coming out in the New York Times. I think this is a major thing. Kathy Preston has a great article, Meat is the New Tobacco. U.S. meat consumption is continuing to drop. I asked the question, are there any data on fish? I'm just wondering sometimes if fish is increasing or not. It's very hard to tell on fish because it's just really unregulated, so I guess maybe it's impossible to know. And there's quite a few other very interesting articles that have come out this last month. I really recommend Ruby Roth and her website, and we're going to hopefully have her on here before too long. She's a vegan children's book author. We also want to have Judy Carman with us. She's gone through the World Peace Facilitator training and is the co-founder of the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals, good friend of ours who lives in Kansas, and the author of The Missing Peace as well as Peace for All Beings, two really, I think, important vegan books, and talking about the prayer flag project that she's been pioneering, which I think is a great project as well. So does anyone have any questions before we begin to wrap it up here? Because if not, I'm happy to really thank all of you again for being with us this evening, for looking at this perspective of making food that's healthy and delicious and nutritious and sustainable available for people, to the masses, that we don't have to spend so much money on health care and on food. It would be a terrific blessing, actually, to our entire world if we reduce that expenditure. And there's lots of ways this can be done, and I have some ideas that I'd like to share about that probably next time. I'll maybe send an email out about it as well. All right, I don't see any hands going up, and so I'd like to again thank Steve for your wonderful, loyal dedication to the cause here, Steve. We really appreciate it. Your selfless giving and just time and energy and support and technical knowledge. I want to thank everyone who spoke today and all of you for listening. And tell your friends, the World Peace Diet Circle is an idea we would like to see, since we're doing these every month. We'd like to see them growing, have more people joining us. We're planning on putting it out to more people so that we can get more momentum going with this call and with the community that we're building. And we just see that happening. So thanks so much. Much love to you all for your efforts. It's really an honor to be working together with you. And we'll look forward to next time. It'll be the third Thursday of April, which is April 19th, which is a big day where I grew up. It's called Patriots Day. It was the day of the Battle of the Old North Bridge. And we began, it's called the Birthplace of America, and the birthday. And on that day we'll be, I'm not sure who we have on the call yet, but I'll let you know soon. All right. Thanks so much, Steve. Thank you, everyone. Have a great rest of the day or evening, and we'll look forward to talking to you next month. Thanks again. Thank you.